the last connection to my old life. He'd done so much for me. As the years went by and I healed, I'd wanted him to know that I wasn't just okay, that with the loving help of my new family, I'd put the pieces of a shattered girl back together. I'd wanted him to be proud, to know that the risk he'd taken for me, a girl he hadn't even known, had been worth it. Jonah Bodine was dead. The man who saved my life, my hero, was gone. And there were no more ties to the town I'd once loved. Until I'd heard Gibson Bodine's voice. Damn it. I looked up his video on my phone and played it for about the millionth time. Whoever had recorded it had been sitting to the side, leaving parts of the crowd visible in the frame. There were faces I recognized in that crowd, people I hadn't seen in years, not since I'd been Callie. They were adults now. What were their lives like? So many seemed to still be there. I caught a glimpse of Scarlett Bodine dancing with someone. God, she wasn't a little girl anymore. Neither was Cassidy Tucker. Was that Bowie Bodine's arm draped around her shoulders? And a woman who had to be June Tucker crossed the corner of the frame for a few seconds. She held hands with a tall, muscular guy. How many of them were married now, starting families? They were planting roots, and half the time I didn't know what time zone I was in. A tear trailed down my cheek. I missed them. The stupid box wouldn't stay closed. And what about Gibson? Was he with someone? Seemed crazy to think he wouldn't be. He'd be in his 30s now. Some bootleg girl had no doubt snatched him up. There were probably 3 or 4 little Bodines running around that town, little boys and girls with their daddy's blue eyes. Why did that notion make me so sad? This place was messing with my head. I hoped Gibson was happily married with a family of his own. Maybe that was why he wasn't interested in a record deal. He had responsibilities at home. Made sense. It also made my stomach hurt. Or maybe that was the cheap whiskey. I glanced at my phone. I hadn't called Quincy and Henna since I'd been here. It was late, but I knew hearing their voices would help me calm down. I brought up their number and hit send. I waited while the phone rang several times. My adoptive parents eschewed a lot of modern technology, including cell phones. They had one house phone in the kitchen. It looked like something out of a movie from the 80s, with a long, twisty cord so they could walk around while they talked. I'd tried to convince them to get cell phones a few times, but they said the radiation was bad for their auras. It was the same reason they didn't own a television or a microwave. "Hello," Henna answered. "Hey, it's Maya." "Hi, Sunflower," she said. "It's so nice to hear your voice. Sorry to call so late." "Is it late? I hadn't noticed." I laughed. Of course not. Henna had always lived by her own calendar, one that had little to do with actual time. "Good. I'm glad I didn't wake you."
"Not at all, sweet girl. I've been on the porch painting in the nude by moonlight. It's wonderful."
"That sounds awesome. Is Quincy home?"
"Oh, yes. He's around."
"How's Blue Moon?" I asked and finished off the whiskey.
"Well, there was a nude protest at the farmer's market last weekend, at least until everyone got sunburnt. Then there's the Pierce's goat. You remember Clementine?"
"Of course."
"Well, a while back she escaped the farm and disappeared for a week or so. She came wandering back like nothing had happened. Turned out she got herself knocked up."
I laughed. "Really?"
"She had 3 little goat babies last week on Jax's side of the bed. They're still trying to figure out how she let herself into the house."
"Only in Blue Moon." "I bet that didn't make him too happy."
"I suppose not. The baby goats sure are cute. Where are you now? Costa Rica, Japan, maybe Australia?"
"No, I'm back in the States."
Welcome home, then. But your aura is vibrating so loudly. What's bothering you?
I took a deep breath. I'm in West Virginia. It's for work, but I saw someone I used to know.
Did you? How did that feel?
Honestly, it scared me. I thought I was past this, but it's making me feel like a kid again.
You're not a child anymore, Sunflower, she said, her voice soothing. I'm sensing a lot of imbalance in your divine energies. Have you been meditating?
Not as much as I should.
That will help. Find your center and unwind the flows of energy that are twisted inside of you.
I smiled. Of course, Henna would suggest meditation. It was her solution to most problems. Facing an important decision? Meditate. Fighting with a friend? Meditate. Stuffy nose? Meditate. You're right. I'll do that.
Good. I'm lighting my candles for you right now. They'll send their light into the universe for you.
Thanks, Henna. I appreciate that.
Sunflower, remember, the past is the past. It can't hurt you anymore. But dwelling there is just going to reopen old wounds that don't need to be opened. I'd feel a lot better if you weren't in West Virginia.
I sat up straighter. All her talk about meditation and energies was what I expected to hear, but why was she worried about me being in West Virginia?
Why? People are looking for you again. For Callie.
I clapped my hand over my mouth to keep the whiskey down. My stomach turned over, and it took me a second to answer. What are you talking about? The case went cold years ago.
They reopened it, she said. I thought you'd know about that.
What? How would I know? Is this recent? You never said anything. She kept talking in the same breezy voice, as if she hadn't just dropped a bombshell on me.
I don't know much about it, just things I've heard here and there. I thought you might have seen something on the netterweb.
The internet?
Yes, that.
For the most part, I'd always loved Henna's spacey obliviousness to the outside world. She and Quincy had naturally insulated me from the fallout of my disappearance at a time when I'd needed to be protected, and they'd been the ones to tell me Jonah Bodine had passed away.
But my case had been reopened.
If there was an active investigation, I really needed to get out of West Virginia. No, I had no idea. She was quiet for a moment.
Sunflower, don't go looking for trouble. Those old hurts are just going to weigh your spirit down. Let it go.
I thought about Gibson. His gravelly voice had taken root inside me. I don't know if I can.
The choice is yours, but you need to be careful. Ask yourself whether this is a road you want to go down, if you're prepared to see what's at the end of it.
I know. I smiled again. Let me guess. Meditate on it?
Mm-hmm, she said. And make sure you're taking your wheatgrass shots. Oh, Quincy waves hello. He took a vow of silence until the full moon is in Aquarius.
Tell him I said hi. And thanks, Henna. I'll let you know when I can come see you.
I look forward to it, love.
Me too. Love you.
Love you too, Sunflower.
I ended the call. Usually talking to Henna left me feeling calm and relaxed. Her soft voice was so soothing. But my case had been reopened. How was that even possible? I got my laptop out of my bag, set it on the bed, and powered it on. Anticipation tingled in my tummy as I Googled my old name. Oh, God. I was going to need another bottle of whiskey for this.
Chapter 6 Gibson. I drove home feeling like a fucking disaster. Ever since Scarlett had found that damn sweater, I'd been stuck on the Callie Kendall roller coaster, and I couldn't get off. My gut churned, and my shoulders were knotted with tension. I sped down the empty highway, my headlights flashing against the trees, lighting up the lines on the road. I rolled down the window to get some air. Gus Porter had got me in to fix the window Misty Lynn had broken, but it didn't help. Callie Kendall had died. I'd been certain of it. She'd been a sweet girl, and I hated the thought that something terrible had happened to her. Wondering if my father had been responsible, though, that was what had been eating me alive for the past year. But Callie wasn't dead, and my father had helped her. He hadn't killed anyone, accidentally or otherwise, but he had kept a big fucking secret for a long time, a secret that could have saved a lot of people from a lot of pain. That woman in the bar, why had I called her Callie? What was it about her that had grabbed me so hard I'd followed her outside? Jenny Leland. I hadn't seen Jonah's mom since the day I'd been taken in for questioning. I'd been avoiding everyone. But she swore she'd seen Callie a year ago. She was the one person who might be able to sort this out. She knew what Callie looked like now. Maya, I said aloud, trying out the name. Was Maya Callie? Clenching my teeth, I punched the steering wheel. It was late, but first thing tomorrow, I was going to have a little chat with Ms. Jenny. Jenny was already sitting in a booth in moonshine. I nodded to Granny Louisa and Estelle on my way in. Half the people in here took one look at me, then started whispering. I rolled my eyes, ignoring them, then took a seat across from my brother's mother.
Morning.
She pushed a full cup of coffee toward me.
I'm glad you called.
Thanks. I took a sip of coffee. Strong and black, just like I liked it. You probably heard by now why Sheriff wanted to talk to me. She nodded.
You were friends with Callie.
Yeah.
I had a feeling there was more to this story than I knew,
she said. I appreciated that she didn't press me for details or ask if I'd been doing something with Callie that I shouldn't have. Jenny gave me the benefit of the doubt, which was more than I could say for the rest of the whispering gossips in the diner. I want to know more about the time you met her.
Okay.
She took a sip of coffee.
Like I said, she contacted me after your father died. She was in Seattle for work, so she asked if we could get together.
What does she do for a living?
I don't know. She didn't tell me anything specific about her life now, and I didn't ask.
I shook my leg under the table and stared into my coffee. Why did my dad lie about it? I asked, then clamped my mouth shut. I hadn't meant to ask that right now.
Gibson.
She paused and reached across the table to put her hand over mine. I didn't pull away.
Your father believed Callie would be in danger if her parents ever found her. And your mother's death sealed his silence. He didn't think it was an accident. He told me 100 times I was never to utter a word about any of this to anyone. I think he was afraid he'd be next.
I shook my head. This was so fucked up. My father, so afraid of Judge Kendall, he'd kept the biggest secret in Bootleg Springs until he died. And my mother's death was probably tied to Callie. Had the judge really had her killed? Did he say why? I asked. Why he thought my mom's accident was connected?
He did, but I didn't realize what he'd been talking about until I found out that the last place your mom had gone was that hotel. You have to understand, he was very distraught when he came to see me. It was hard to put together everything he was saying.
What did he say? Why did Mom go out there?
I can't be sure, so don't take this as gospel. But I think the two of them fought about keeping Callie's secret. She wanted Callie's mother to know that Callie was all right. Your dad disagreed, vehemently. But it sounds like Connie went to talk to Mrs. Kendall anyway.
Sounds like Mom. She always did what she wanted. I took a deep breath. Guess she should have listened to him that time. Jenny squeezed my hand. It felt good.
I'm so sorry, honey.
I didn't meet Jenny's eyes. Talking about my mom had always been rough, but talking about her with Jenny was harder. If Mom told Mrs. Kendall, the judge could have found out and decided to get rid of her so she wouldn't tell anyone else.
It's possible.
Fuck, I muttered. She squeezed my hand again.
I couldn't agree more.
I didn't want to talk about my parents anymore. It was such a confusing mess. I pulled my hand away and took out my wallet, grabbed the photo strip, and put it on the table. Jenny turned it so she could look at them right side up.
So, this is what the fuss was all about.
I grunted.
You're both so young.
You're sure the woman you met is Callie? It wasn't that I didn't trust Jenny, but I had to be sure. She nodded, her eyes still on the photos.
She looks different now, but some of that is age. She has a baby face here, but I can tell it's her.
How was I supposed to ask if she'd had rainbow hair and a scar on her cheek? I didn't want to talk about what had happened last night. Different, though? I asked. Different how? Jenny shifted in her seat.
Well, she had pink hair, like she's blonde, but dyed it. It was very cute. There's something else about the shape of her face that seems different in these photos, but it could just be her age. Maybe her nose? And she has a scar on her cheek now. I suspect she got it the night she disappeared.
My chest tightened. Scar on her cheek. The woman last night had a scar. But I didn't say anything to Jenny. I wasn't sure if I was ever going to tell anyone I'd seen her. If Maya was Callie, she hadn't wanted me to know. That stung, but I didn't want to talk about that either. I slid the pictures back across the table and put them in my wallet. Thanks. I guess I just wanted to make sure it was really her.
Of course you did.
She said.
Tell you what, honey, let me buy you breakfast.
Thanks, but I have a lot of work to do. I stood and she followed. Before I could turn and head for the door, she wrapped me in a hug. I was so startled, I just stood there for a second, not sure what to do. Then I put my arms around her and patted her on the back before she let go and stepped back. Great, now I had two women in my family forcing hugs on me.
Have a good day, Gibson,
she said with a smile. I cleared my throat and gave her a short nod. You too. Ignoring the whispers from the other diners, I left and drove home. I knew people were talking, but fuck 'em. They could say what they wanted. I hadn't been lying. I did have work to do. My workshop was in a metal pole building I'd constructed next to my house. It smelled of sawdust and wood stain. Granny Louisa was finally replacing her kitchen cabinets. Devlin had hired Scarlett to do a lot of work on Granny Louisa's outdated house already, but they were just now tackling the kitchen. They'd chosen a nice maple, the design simple and classic. My stomach growled while I worked. I probably should have taken Jenny up on that offer of breakfast or grabbed something on the way home, but I had too much on my mind. I felt on edge, like a rubber band pulled too tight. I worked until lunch, then took a break. By the time I got back to it in the early afternoon, I'd buried most of my feelings in sawdust and sweat. If Maya was Callie, at least I'd gotten a glimpse of her. She was alive, and there was relief in that. And why did it matter? She wasn't an ex-girlfriend, not the one who got away. She'd been my friend for a couple of summers when we were both young. Whether or not I had the chance to see her again didn't impact my life. I didn't know why I was so bent out of shape about it. I put the sander down and took off my goggles. The cabinets were coming along nicely. I brushed the sawdust off my hands, some of it anyway, and shook out my shirt. I needed some water. There were two reasons I'd become a custom cabinet maker. One, I could be my own boss. I discovered early on that me and authority didn't get on so well, and I was smart enough to realize I needed a way to make a living where I didn't have to answer to someone else. Just my apprenticeship had nearly killed me. Two, I could work alone in a workshop at my house. Work with my hands, only have to leave to do client installations, and no boss to answer to. Oh, dream job. I went inside the house and got some water. While I was there, I checked my phone. I had a text from Scarlett telling me, not asking, to come to breakfast at Moonshine in the morning. I didn't bother replying. I'd go if I felt like it. A faint sound came from outside, a car pulling up my driveway. I groaned. Now what? I really needed to put a gate at the entrance to my property with a lock. I debated whether or not to answer. The engine stopped. Car door closed. Whoever it was, they'd be knocking in a few seconds. It might be a reporter wanting the dirt on my visit to the sheriff's office, or another one of those record company dipshits. I had nothing to say to either of them. But no one knocked. I put my empty glass down and glowered at the door. What were they doing out there, wandering around my property? Maybe it was a nosy reporter. They might be walking around, taking pictures. I hadn't locked my workshop. Damn it, were they over there? I didn't like people in my space, especially people I hadn't invited. In a few strides, I was at the front door. I threw it open, ready to rush outside and kick the nosy son of a bitch off my land. It wasn't a reporter. The woman from last night, Maya, stood on the step, her eyes wide. Her multicolored hair was wild around her face, blowing in the breeze. We stood for a long moment, staring at each other like we were frozen in place. Without warning, she hurled herself at me, jumping up and throwing her arms around my neck.
Gibson!
The air rushed from my lungs, and a lump rose in my throat. She dangled against me, her feet lifted off the ground, so I wrapped my arms around her to hold her up. I knew it. Deep down, I'd known it was her. I spoke low into her ear. "Hey, Callie." Her body shuddered, but I had no idea if she was laughing or crying. Felt like both. Closing my eyes, I held her while she laughed, then sobbed, then laughed again. I didn't give a crap what she did. She was here. She was alive. Oh, God, I never wanted to let go. Eventually, she seemed to calm. I let her slide down until her feet touched the ground, then reluctantly dropped my arms.
"Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I'm such a mess," she said, sniffing.
She swiped her fingers beneath her eyes, then glanced behind her.
"Can I come in? Maybe I shouldn't. I should probably just go."
"No." Before I could stop myself, I grabbed her wrist. "No, don't go. Jesus, Callie, don't disappear again." She glanced over her shoulder again, then met my eyes.
"Okay."
I gently tugged her inside and shut and locked the door behind her. Kinda still felt like she was a flight risk. She glanced behind her and touched the lock a few times, like she was checking it, then turned back to face me.
"I got mascara on your shoulder."
She reached for my shirt, but jerked her hand away, like she was afraid she'd get burned. I couldn't seem to get any words out. I just stared at her, at that crazy-ass hair, the scar running down her cheek, leaving a little notch in her upper lip. She wore a loose shirt over a black tank top with a pair of cut-off jeans that showed a hell of a lot of leg, not that I was looking, and beaded sandals. Her shirt gave me a peekaboo glimpse of the tattoos down her arms.
"You're really standing here, aren't you?" I said, finally.
She chewed her bottom lip and nodded.
"I'm so sorry about last night. You caught me off guard, and I didn't handle it very well."
"God damn. Ugh. I thought you were dead. This is freaking me the hell out." A few more tears broke free from the corners of her eyes. They were a pretty shade of hazel.
"I don't even know what to say. I'm sorry isn't enough. It's just so good to see you again."
She covered her mouth, her shoulders shaking with renewed sobs. It took me a second to react. I didn't understand women on a good day. I had no idea what the fuck to do right now.
"Come on, let's just sit down."
I was almost afraid to touch her again. That hug had felt good, too good, and I didn't even like hugs. With my hand on her back, I guided her to the couch and sat down next to her.
"I have no idea what's wrong with me," she said. "I never cry like this."
"It's all right. Just breathe or something." She took a deep breath.
"That's better. Thank you."
"You want to tell me what's going on? Who's Maya?"
"Me. I'm Maya."
She took another breath.
"I am now. I mean, I changed my name."
I nodded. A name change made sense. "Why were you in that bar? Don't tell me you live 50 miles outside Bootleg."
"No, I haven't been in West Virginia since, well, since I left. I'm a producer for Adelon Records. My boss saw a video of you online, and he wanted me to talk you into signing a record contract. I wasn't going to come, but he had me listen to you sing, and it felt like the next thing I knew, I was sitting in that bar."
I grunted. So that guy wasn't fucking with me.
"Oliver? No, he was serious."
"I still don't want a record deal." She cracked a smile, her cheeks still wet with her tears.
"I know. That's not really why I came, anyway."
I had so many questions. What had happened the night she disappeared? Had my dad really helped her? Where had she been all these years? But there was one thing I had to know above all else. Why didn't you tell me you were okay? The smile disappeared from her lips, and she looked down at her hands.
I was afraid. The fewer people who knew the truth, the safer everyone would be. I didn't want to put you in danger. I still don't.
Fuck danger. I thought you were dead.
I know this is hard to understand, but it was something I had to do. I had to leave, and I couldn't come back.
A battle raged inside me, anger warring with relief. I was pissed at her for disappearing, pissed that it had hurt me so much. I was mad that she was alive and my dad had known. But God, it was good to see her. Things had changed. We were both older and had been through our own shit, but she was still familiar. I felt like I could pick up my guitar and strum a few chords and we'd be right back where we were 13 years ago. Well, here you are. She nodded slowly.
Yeah, here I am. But Gibbs, you can't tell anyone I'm here. If word got out, I don't want to think about what would happen.
I had an inexplicable urge to scoop her into my lap and cradle her against me, but I didn't. Don't worry, your secret is safe with me.
Chapter 7, Maya. This place, and Gibson Bodine, had me completely unhinged. I was surprised he hadn't kicked me out for acting like a crazy person. I'd thrown myself at him before he'd even invited me inside. I didn't know what had come over me. I'd spent the drive here working out what to say, in between arguing with myself over whether to turn around and speed to the closest airport. When he'd opened that door, his face like a storm cloud, my carefully crafted speech had disappeared, and I'd jumped right into his arms. As soon as he'd murmured my name, his low voice gravelly in my ear, I'd crumbled. With a flood of tears that smeared makeup all over his shirt, I'd alternated between laughing and crying. It was like I'd gone hysterical. And now all I could think about was the fact that there was no sign of a woman here. The only decor was a metal sculpture above the wood stove and a single framed photograph on the mantel. No candles or vases, no knick-knacks or artwork. He had some nice furniture, a TV on the wall, and a stack of wood near the wood stove. Certainly no signs of a family. No ring on his finger either. It probably meant he wasn't married. Had he ever been married? Was he dating someone? He probably was. What would I find in his bathroom? An extra toothbrush for when she spent the night? What was wrong with me? Gibson's relationship status had nothing to do with me. It wasn't like I was staying. And there were bigger issues at play here. I know you probably have a million questions. I tucked my legs beneath me.
I do, but...
He rubbed the back of his neck.
I think I can put most of it together at this point. Things at home must have been real bad.
Tears welled up in my eyes again, and the damn demons in the box howled. I nodded, trying to swallow past the lump in my throat.
Shit. Don't cry again, he said. We don't have to talk about that. So, you ran.
I nodded again. It was like my mouth was glued shut. I couldn't talk about that night.
My dad really helped you?
Yes. I barely managed to croak out the word. He was quiet for a long moment, opening and closing his fists.
All right, so you got away, and you didn't think it was safe to come back. I get that, but why are you here now?
That was a very good question. I brushed a tear from my cheek. I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to run and never set foot in West Virginia again. I've worked really hard to move on and live my life. But ever since I heard your voice in that video, it's like the past keeps trying to grab hold of me. He grunted, but I could tell he wasn't satisfied with my vague explanation. Seeing you last night dredged up a lot of stuff for me, and then you recognized me. I glanced up and met his gaze. I'm sorry I didn't admit it was me, but I wasn't prepared for that.
I wasn't sure it was you. I don't know what made me say your name. You look different, and your hair is distracting.
I fingered a lock of my hair, glad he hadn't pointed out the scar on my face. Not different enough, apparently.
Most people wouldn't know, he said. I bet you could walk down Lake Drive at high noon, and the most you'd get are some funny glances.
Then how did you know, Gibbs? Maybe. I took a deep breath. After I saw you last night, I called Henna. She's my adoptive mom. She casually mentioned I should be careful because my case had been reopened. I Googled it, and God, I still don't know what to think.
You didn't know?
I shook my head. I've been out of the country for most of the last year, and my parents are... they're unique. They live off-grid. No TV. To them, keeping up with current events means tracking celestial phenomena and horoscopes. They didn't tell me, and I had no reason to go looking. Gibson stood and started pacing around the room.
It's been a shit show around here.
I'm sorry.
Don't. It's not your fault my dad kept your damn sweater.
I still feel awful that people think he... He stopped and met my eyes.
The people think he killed you.
I shrugged. Obviously he didn't. I'm right here. Gibson cracked a smile.
Yeah, no shit.
That smile made my tummy do a little flip. So I guess I'm here because I'm sorry about last night. And after seeing all those news stories, I wanted you to know it was me and that I'm okay.
How did you know where I live?
It wasn't hard to find. Property records are public information, and Bootleg is a small town.
Fair enough. So what happens now?
Another good question. People think Callie is dead, right? That forensics report said the body they found is me. She needs to stay that way.
What?
His brow furrowed.
Why would you say that?
Because it's safer for everyone. I've stayed alive this long because people kept me hidden, and then because my case went cold. If it's closed now, I can just go on living my life as Maya.
There are people who know, Callie,
he said.
Jenny Leland is here, in Bootleg. She told us you're alive.
Dread swept through me, and I covered my mouth with my hand.
She didn't say anything for a while, but I guess she couldn't watch everyone grieve over a death that hadn't happened. Not when she'd seen you with her own eyes.
Who else knows? He rubbed his chin.
My family, Sheriff Tucker, rest of the cops in town, I'd imagine.
I stood, the sudden urge to run almost overwhelming. I was Callie all over again, a terrified girl, hurt and alone, huddled in a cabin in the woods, certain they'd find me.
Hey, slow down there.
Gibson was suddenly behind me, his big hands on my arms, his grip gentle.
No one knows where you are, and they won't. You're safe here.
Closing my eyes, I took a long, slow breath. He didn't let go, and I certainly didn't want him to. His strong hands anchored me. But the box in my mind rattled violently. Quincy and Henna had always told me that the past needed to be left behind, that peace could only be found by living in the moment. I'd breathed and cleansed and meditated my way through the last 13 years, trying to believe they were right, trying to make them right, and yet the box had never disappeared. My past was locked inside, but it was still a part of me. Callie lived on. I don't know what to do, I said finally.
People are gonna dig, he said. The sheriff knows you aren't dead. He knows someone falsified that forensics report, so they'd say that body in New York is you. And it's not just him. Hell, it was June Tucker who exposed that woman claiming to be you earlier this year.
Do the Kendalls know that? Do they know about Jenny?
I don't think so.
He dropped his hands.
But they probably know about me.
I whipped around to face him. What about you? He rubbed the back of his neck again.
Do you remember when I took you to that concert over in Perrinville?
Yeah.
We hopped in that photo booth on the way back to my truck.
He walked over to the kitchen counter and picked up his wallet, then pulled something out. I took a faded photo strip from his hands. A fresh wave of tears stung my eyes. Oh my God, I forgot about these.
Misty Lynn Prosser stole my wallet out of my truck after I told her off. She found those and turned them in. Sheriff hauled me in for questioning. The whole town knows now.
I remembered Misty Lynn. She was a few years older than me and basically a nightmare. Why did Misty Lynn steal your wallet? He groaned.
I don't want to talk about it.
Why not?
She's crazy, all right. I dated her for a little while about a million years ago, and she's been trying to worm her way back into my life ever since.
I gaped at him. Oh my God, please tell me you're kidding. You dated Misty Lynn Prosser? His expression clouded over.
It's not like I'm proud of it. Fuck's sake, I was 21. Everybody makes mistakes, especially at that age.
I didn't know why I found it so funny. Maybe it was because he was getting so defensive. Sure, but not everyone makes a Misty Lynn-sized mistake. The veins in his forearms popped as he clenched his fists. God, he had nice arms.
I'm never gonna live that shit down, am I?
It's Misty Lynn. I tried to suppress my smile.
Probably not.
He spun around and stomped down the hallway. Before I could react, he stomped his way back.
I want to yell at you to get out, but if I do, I'll probably never fucking see you again.
I covered my mouth again, trying not to laugh, but I couldn't help it. Callie was retreating back into the recesses of my psyche, and I felt like Maya again. I'm sorry, I'm just giving you a hard time. I wouldn't want you to meet some of my mistakes. He narrowed his eyes at me, but I couldn't tell what that expression meant.
All right, you can stay.
I tucked my hair behind my ear. We both know I really can't.
What if you just stayed for a little while?
He said, his voice soft again.
If you have to disappear again, fine, I get it. But it's been 13 years. You really gonna show up here after all that time and stay for half an hour?
Like I said, I don't know what I should do. With his hands on his hips, he looked down at the floor and took a deep breath. Some of the intensity in his posture seemed to melt away. When he lifted his face to meet my eyes, he looked so much like the Gibson I remembered. It nearly made my heart stop.
How about a song?
I bit my lower lip. I didn't think I could refuse him anything when he looked at me like that. You want to play with me?
It was our thing, right?
It was. I glanced down, the question leaving my lips before I could stop myself from asking. You don't have a girlfriend who'll show up and get mad because I'm here, do you? He scowled.
No.
I had to fight to keep the smile off my face. I was just making sure. I wouldn't want to make more trouble for you. He took a few steps closer. His arm moved a little, as if he was going to touch me, but changed his mind.
Look, this mess is bigger than both of us. All I know is right now I have my friend back. I'd kind of like to make the most of it while I can.
I met his eyes. They were so blue. Okay, I'll stay a while. He went into another room and came out with an acoustic guitar. I took one corner of the couch and he sat on the edge of the other. After plucking the strings and making a few small adjustments to the tuning pegs, he strummed the opening chords to I Fall to Pieces, a classic Patsy Cline song. God, it felt good to sing with him again. One song turned into another. Soon we were singing and talking like we used to. Not about Callie or investigations or the Kendalls, about music. I told him about some of the artists I'd worked with, the things I'd seen, places I'd been. And he told me about Bootleg, about the tourism boom, the new vacation rentals and spas in town, the things that were different and the things that were the same. He talked about meeting his half-brother Jonah last year, about Scarlett's mini real estate empire and the unlikely man who'd captured her heart. He told me about his brother Bowie finally marrying Cassidy Tucker, about Liam A. Larkin coming back to Bootleg and getting engaged to Jameson, about Jonah's girlfriend Shelby and her brother George, the big football player who was dating June Tucker. There was so much I'd missed. The kids I'd known had grown up and started their lives. So many were still here. Bootleg Springs was that sort of place, the kind of town that drew people in and made them want to stay. A lifetime ago, I'd daydreamed about living here, making this my home. I hardly remembered what it was like to have a home now. We talked and played well into the night. Gibson produced some snacks from the kitchen, and neither of us said anything about the time. I needed to go. It was a long drive on winding roads to get back to my motel, but I couldn't seem to make myself leave. Finally, my eyes were getting too heavy for me to deny how tired I was. I should probably get going. Gibson rubbed his chin and seemed to consider something for a moment.
It's late. You should just crash here.
Every bit of me wanted to take him up on his offer, but I couldn't stay here. Thanks, but I shouldn't.
Sweetheart, it's 3 a.m, and I'm not going to let you leave just so you can run off the road on the way back to your crappy motel.
He stood.
Come on, you can sleep in my room. I'll take the couch.
You don't have to. He turned and leveled me with a glare. Apparently, he wasn't taking no for an answer. And really, I didn't want to go. Thanks.
Mm-hmm,
he mumbled.
I'll get you some fresh blankets.
I followed him to his room, and Callie made a momentary reappearance, my heart fluttering and cheeks flushing at the thought of being in Gibson Bodine's bedroom. I tried to tell myself I was being silly. I was far from the teenage virgin of 13 years ago. But being with him in his bedroom, even while he was making up the bed for me to sleep in alone, felt a little thrilling, even dangerous. I liked it. He said a gruff good night and left me there. I glanced around at the tidy room. The walls made of logs and the bed with a quilt that looked homemade. It was so very Gibson. And I still couldn't quite believe I was here.
Chapter 8. Gibson. The sound of someone knocking on my door woke me with a start. It felt like I'd fallen asleep about 5 minutes ago, but sure enough, light peeked in through the curtains. Whoever it was knocked again. I groaned, hauling myself off the couch. Why the fuck were so many people banging on my door these days? I ran a hand through my hair, still blinking the sleep from my eyes, and opened the door. Scarlett stood on the step, an accusatory look on her face.
Morning, sunshine.
What do you want, Scar? She crossed her arms.
Well, you weren't answering your phone, so I came by to find out why you weren't at Moonshine this morning, but I think the reason is pretty obvious.
I scratched the back of my neck, still trying to wake up. What reason?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe the owner of the car out front and those pretty little sandals in there?
She pointed at something behind me. Oh, shit. I glanced over my shoulder. Sure enough, Callie's sandals were right there in plain sight. That's none of your business, I snapped.
Trust me, Gibbs, I don't want to know the details, but you're an ass for missing breakfast because you brought some hussy home last night.
Anger flared, running hot in my veins. I pointed a finger in my sister's face. Don't you fucking call her that, you hear me? Her eyes widened, but instead of attacking me like a feral cat, her mouth turned up in a wide grin.
Oh my God.
I'd rather face the feral cat, and Scarlet was a biter, than that smile. Crap, why had I said that? What?
I know you have a girl in there, but Gibson Bodine, is it a girl you actually like?
She stood on her tiptoes, trying to look past me.
Who is she? Do you have a secret girlfriend?
Damn my nosy sister. Why'd she pick today to stop by unannounced? It was like she was drawn to family drama. No. I moved forward, bracing an arm against the doorframe to block her access. I didn't want her trying to slip inside. What could I tell her? Callie Kendall's alive and sleeping in my goddamn bed? It's not like that. She's just a friend who needed a place to crash last night. Inwardly, I congratulated myself on that one. It wasn't even a lie. Scarlet, however, clearly wasn't buying it.
Since when do you have friends?
I have friends.
Like who?
I glowered at her. I'm not telling you who she is. She grinned.
Because she's your secret girlfriend.
Jesus, Scar. No, she's not. Go the fuck home.
Fine. But tell your secret girlfriend I like her shoes.
I rolled my eyes, stepped back, and shut the door in her face.
If your secret girlfriend needs a place to stay, let me know,
she said through the door.
I might have a last-minute cancel on one of my lake cabins.
Go away. I ran my hand over my face. I needed coffee so I could think. What was going to happen now? Would Callie say goodbye and I'd never see her again? Maybe I could convince her to start up the postcard thing again, but send them to me. At least I'd keep some connection to her. I could keep a secret. That clearly wasn't an issue. I'd just burn them after I read them. Then there'd be no evidence of her. I hated that idea, not because I'd want to keep the postcards or because I was worried about people finding out. It was because I didn't want her to leave. The floor creaked behind me. I looked over my shoulder, and it felt like the wind had been knocked out of my lungs. Callie crept out from the hallway, dressed in one of my flannel shirts. Her crazy hair was a mess, and I couldn't tell if she was wearing anything underneath. The shirt was long enough on her. It might have been hiding her shorts, but her legs were looking awfully bare. I cleared my throat. Morning.
Hey.
She brushed her hair back from her face.
Was that your sister?
Yeah, don't worry. She doesn't know you're here.
Thanks.
She glanced down at the shirt she was wearing.
Oh, sorry. I found this in your closet. I hope you don't mind. I left my bag in the car last night.
I didn't mind. The problem was, I liked the way she looked in my shirt a lot more than I should have. It's fine. Hungry? She covered her mouth to stifle a yawn.
A bit. Sorry, my body still hasn't figured out what time zone it's in.
I glanced toward the kitchen. I don't have much here. I don't have people over that often. Or, you know, ever.
That's okay. Just coffee would be great.
Sure. I paused for a second, waiting for her to say she didn't need breakfast because she was leaving anyway. The thought made my chest hurt. I felt like I was on borrowed time with her, like if I didn't say something fast, she'd be out the door. I'll run into town and get some food. You can just hunker down here. Her lips parted like she was about to say something, but she closed her mouth again. You got somewhere you need to be? I asked. She lifted one shoulder in a shrug.
No, not really.
Then I'll go get breakfast. I didn't wait for her to reply, just started some coffee, then went back to my room to throw on some jeans and a clean t-shirt. I wasn't going to keep her captive. She could walk right out that door anytime she wanted to, but if I could coax a little more time out of her, I was going to do it. Why? Because seeing her again was messing with my insides in ways I both hated and couldn't get enough of. When I came out, she was in my kitchen waiting for the coffee to brew. She looked damn good in my shirt. She'd been pretty as a teenager, but now, oh, holy hell, she was hot as sin. I really needed to stop thinking like that. This was Callie Kendall. She wasn't standing in the kitchen wearing my shirt, her hair a mess because I'd spent last night fucking her senseless, although that's exactly what she looked like, and I was hard as steel just thinking about it. Damn it, Gibson, knock that shit off. Tearing my eyes away from those ridiculous legs, I grabbed my phone and keys. I'll be back. If anyone comes over, don't answer. She said goodbye as I was walking out the door. I just grunted, shutting the door behind me. Then I checked twice to make sure it was locked before heading to my truck. I drove into town and stopped at the Pop-In. Of course, it was busy. The tourist season was winding down, but there were still a lot more people around than I liked. I just needed to get in and get out, preferably without any of my nosy family seeing me. At least Scarlet wasn't here. I got some eggs and bread, but realized I had no idea what she liked. Shit. Inexperienced with women, I was not, but I had no idea what to feed one. What if she was a vegetarian or something? Maybe I should have just gone to Moonshine and ordered one of everything to go. Moving through the store, I dodged the other customers and grabbed a random assortment of stuff. Packaged pastries, a pint of strawberries, some cheese, a few cans of soup, crackers, orange juice. I paused in front of the shampoo and body wash. Maybe she'd want a shower. What did girls use? Even in this little store, there were basically 10,000 different options. I grabbed a bottle with flowers on it and flipped open the lid. Did they go by smell? This one wasn't bad.
What you doing there, Gibbs?
I froze, like I'd just been caught stealing. Cassidy stood next to me, tilting her head, a little smile on her face. Nothing, I said, putting the bottle back on the shelf.
Looking for something to make your hair softer?
She took a different bottle and held it out to me.
Might I recommend this?
I glared at her, but took the bottle out of her hand. Shouldn't you be on a honeymoon or something?
We were saving it for later anyway, but we're certainly not going anywhere now, not with everything that's going on. Do you need conditioner?
She handed me another bottle. Great, she'd obviously talked to Scarlet, and me buying girl shit was making it look like I was hiding a secret girlfriend at my place. But she was being kinda helpful. I tossed the conditioner in with the rest of the stuff and hesitated, not quite meeting Cassidy's gaze. With her mouth still turned up in a grin, she shook her head and rolled her eyes. She glanced up and down the aisle, then grabbed body wash, a package of pink razors, a toothbrush, deodorant, and a hairbrush. Thanks, I muttered, then took my stuff to the front. I didn't want to give her a chance to ask any questions. Opal Bodine, no relation, was behind the front counter. She sat on a stool, her nose in a book. I waited for a few seconds, but she didn't look up. I cleared my throat, and she just about jumped off her stool.
Sorry.
She put a bookmark in the book and set it down. Was she blushing? That was weird.
Didn't see you there, Gibbs.
I grunted something noncommittal, then glanced around while I set my stuff out for her to scan. A couple of summertimers got in line behind me, and I noticed Buck wandering around with a package of donuts. No worries about gossip there. But then Zadie Rummerfield walked in, stopped, and looked right at me. Her eyes tracked my purchases, and she lifted an eyebrow. Well, shit. As quickly as I could, I paid and grabbed my bags. Why the hell did I have so much stuff and got out of there? But I could practically feel the rumor mill sparking to life. It was like a fuse on a big stick of dynamite, one that was going to light up the whole town.
Chapter 9. Maya. Coffee was perking me up. I sat nestled in the corner of Gibson's couch, cradling the mug in my hands, my legs tucked up beneath me. I hadn't been able to resist slipping on one of his shirts before I came out of his room this morning. The dark blue plaid was soft against my skin. And I really had left my bag in the car last night. It wasn't like I'd come here planning to stay over. Plus, his shirt smelled good. Really good. I lifted the collar to my nose and inhaled. It smelled like fresh laundry. But even clean, right out of his closet, there was a hint of Gibson on it. It was the silliest thing, but I wondered if he'd let me keep it. Waking up here in Gibson Bodine's house, in his bed, no less, felt like something out of a dream. And amazingly enough, not a nightmare, considering I was on the outskirts of the town I thought I'd never be able to see again. However, I still felt unbalanced. I'd kept all things Callie locked away for so long, I didn't know what to do with her now. Last night I'd bounced back and forth between feeling uncertain and afraid, like I was Callie all over again. To calm and composed, I'd hoped I could sleep it off and face today feeling whole, feeling like Maya. But it was as if I'd cracked. I was two different people, inhabiting the same body. Really, I always had been. I'd just put Callie away and never let her out. I'd lived 13 years as Maya. But Gibson wasn't the only thing that had escaped the box and wouldn't go back in. Callie had too. And I had no idea what I was going to do about that. For about the millionth time, I told myself I should go. This was beyond complicated. It wasn't safe for me here. But Gibson wasn't the only one who knew I was alive. He was right. People were going to dig. If I wanted Callie to stay gone, I'd have to disappear. Really disappear. No contact. No ties. I had plenty of places I could go. I knew how to drop off the map. I was good at it. Maybe I should have been busy wiping down every surface I'd touched to get rid of my fingerprints. But I stayed where I was, sipping coffee on Gibson's couch. At the very least, I wasn't going to leave without saying goodbye. Not again. But if I left, then what? The way rumors flew through this town, the Kendalls had to know about Gibson keeping those photos. That put a great big target on his back. And he'd said June Tucker had exposed the fraud posing as me. Did the judge know that? Who else had been poking around in my case? Cassidy? Gibson said she was a deputy. And Jenny Leland was here. If it got out that she'd said I was alive, how many people were in danger because of me? Closing my eyes, I took a few deep breaths, trying to slow my racing heart. Maybe I wasn't prepared to face what was at the end of this road. The front door opened and Gibson came in, loaded down with grocery bags. I set my coffee down and stood. Do you need help with that?
I got it.
He brought the bags into the kitchen and set them on the counter. I followed him in and watched as he started pulling things out. I wanted to help, but I didn't know where anything went, and he was so gruff. It wasn't just his gravelly voice and furrowed brow. Even his movements had a rough edge to them. It made me feel like I should stay out of his way. That, or climb him like a tree. I thought you were just getting breakfast, I asked after he'd emptied the third bag.
I didn't know what you'd want.
He pulled out a bottle of shampoo, then conditioner, followed by a bag full of toiletries. Pinks, lavenders, flowers, a hairbrush, none of that was for him. He didn't have a girlfriend. He was stocking up for me. I felt like a ping-pong ball bouncing back and forth across the table of indecision. Run, stay, run, stay. Gibson looked over his shoulder and his eyes flicked up and down. His expression softened and one corner of his mouth lifted.
I kind of went overboard.
Like magic, that little smile calmed my thundering heart. Thanks. I really appreciate it.
He muttered something that sounded like you're welcome, then went back to putting things away.
How about this? You were sweet enough to go to the store, so I'll make us breakfast.
I stepped closer and hip-checked him out of the way. His head whipped around and he gave me a look I couldn't read. That damn brow furrow he kept doing made me all melty inside. I had to stop myself from sidling up to him and threading my arms around his waist. I needed to calm my hormones. Apparently my old crush on Gibson was another thing that hadn't gone back into the box. It was out in full force, as if it hadn't been 13 years since I'd seen him. But it was totally one-sided, just like it always had been. He was being nice to me, but I wasn't getting a hint of attraction from him. Unless he was trying to hide it. I sighed and got to work on breakfast. Now I was just making things up. The situation was complicated enough. I didn't need a bunch of imaginary sexual tension making it worse, even if the tension wasn't imaginary for me. After breakfast, Gibson said he had work to do out in his shop. He brought my bag in from my rental car. He seemed hesitant to let me go outside or to leave me alone. Whether it was because he was afraid someone would see me or that I'd leave, I wasn't sure. I showered using the stuff he'd bought for me and changed into clean clothes. I left his flannel shirt lying on his bed. I wondered if there was a way to get him to wear it for a little while and then let me put it back on. Probably not. There really wasn't a way to say, "Hey, Gibbs, can you wear this for a few hours so I can put it on and enjoy your scent?" That wasn't weird.
While Gibson worked, I could hear the muffled sound of power tools coming from his shop. I checked my messages. I had a text from Oliver wanting to know how things were going. What was I supposed to tell him?
I'd slept at Gibson Bodine's house last night because he'd been my friend before I ran away and changed my identity.
Obviously, I couldn't tell him the whole story. But I decided to call and check in.
"There you are," he said when he answered. I was starting to worry.
"Why? Because you sent me out to talk to a random singer who's, what did you call him? Hostile?"
"Pretty much. Do you have good news for me?"
"Well, I have some good news. He hasn't signed with another label."
"Great. But why do I get the feeling you have bad news, too?"
I twined a strand of hair around my finger. "The bad news is he doesn't want to sign with us either. He doesn't want to sign with anyone."
"Damn. Really? You couldn't talk him into it?"
I sighed. "No, because I got distracted by the fact that he thought I was dead, and then we sang together like old times."
"Not so far." "That's my girl. Wear him down."
"Don't expect any miracles, Oliver. He's talented, but he has a lot going on in his life right now."
"I have faith in you."
I laughed. "Thanks, I think."
"Keep me posted."
"Will do. Talk to you later." I put my phone down, feeling a little shaky.
Why had that left me so unsettled? I was still struggling to reconcile what was happening. Talking to Oliver felt so normal, so Maya. But I was sitting in a log cabin outside Bootleg Springs with Gibson Bodine working in his shop outside. Henna's soothing voice ran through my mind.
Meditate and let it go, sunflower.
That was exactly what I needed to do. Center my energy, be present in the moment. I found a blanket, folded it neatly, and set it on the floor in front of the couch. Sitting cross-legged, I closed my eyes and breathed. At first, my mind spun like a whirlwind, thoughts flitting in and out of my consciousness. I kept breathing, centering. Gradually, the chaos diminished. I felt a familiar sense of peace and calm. The box still made its presence known. Without trying to push it away, I acknowledged it. It wasn't a problem for right now, not this minute. For now, I was in a holding pattern. Gibson hadn't explicitly invited me to stay today. He'd just acted as if I would. And as I sat there, breathing deeply, my mind calm, I realized I was glad. He hadn't insisted I stay or pressed me to tell him what I planned to do. He'd just bought me breakfast food and lunch and dinner,